Good evening, everybody. This is Corey, and I am doing something very, very different tonight than what I have done in the past on other episodes. For one, normally whenever I'm working on a show that I'm going to be doing part of or most of by myself, I tend to script things out pretty well. And in this case, I have not done that. You're going to be hearing me very much extemporaneously, very much off the cuff. And that has to do a lot with the second thing I'm here to talk to you about. If you have read the title of this episode, you know that this is an episode about Peter Padden. Peter Padden passed away on Thursday, October 23rd, sometime in the early morning. He passed away peacefully in his sleep in his home in California. And it was very unexpected. I don't think anybody saw it coming. It's come as a bit of a shock to everybody in the community, everybody that's been involved with him, the people in his coven, and most especially, of course, his wife Linda and his family. So, I have contributed a small piece, sort of pre-written, thought-out memorial piece for a group memorial that I believe will be coming out on several different podcast feeds, hopefully ours as well, where a number of the podcasters, since Peter was a podcaster in the pagan community, will be coming together to remember him and memorialize him that way. But I needed to do something else too. This is kind of my very public way of saying goodbye to somebody that meant a lot more to me than I think most people would realize. So that's what you're getting here tonight. This is a somewhat raw, somewhat off-the-cuff way of me saying goodbye to Peter Padden and inviting you to participate in that that farewell. And so I'm hoping that what I'll be able to do here tonight is remember him as best I can with some memories of my own. That I'm going to be sharing. I'm also hoping to share some segments from his podcast from over the years so that if you don't know much about him, you can get a feel for him. And if you do know much about him, you can join me in remembering just what a wonderful man he was and what a tremendous ancestor we have gained in this community in Peter. I say that as tonight is the first night when doing my ancestral litany, which I do every week, I lit my candle and I had to include his name in my list of spiritual ancestors. And I say that not to come from any place of bragging or boasting. I am not the most qualified person to talk about Peter Padden by a long shot. He had a lot of people who were closer to him, a lot of people who knew him far, far better than I did, but all I can think is if he meant as much as he meant to me, I can't begin to imagine how much he meant to those other people. And so I have to add something to that conversation. I have to add at least one drop to that ocean of feeling about Peter Padden and remembering him. So, what you'll be hearing tonight, you'll be hearing, like I said, some memories from me, some memories that I'm going to be sharing in his own voice, in his own words. We'll hear some of the music that he liked, that I like as well. He introduced me, in some ways, to some of these things. You'll find out why he mattered to me. You'll find out why he matters to New World Witchery, as a show, as a site, as an entire phenomenon, as what we are now, because Well, we'll get there. We'll get there. But it would be impossible for me to overstate his value. So we'll begin with a little bit of music, and then share some memories and listen to a little bit of Peter himself. All right.
Certainly, if you follow a Celtic tradition like I do, the story is somewhat different, because the ancient Celts believed very much in line with the ancient Hindus. And what they believed was that when you died, you got thrown in the cauldron of rebirth. Now, you didn't get thrown in straight away. You got some R&R time in the Summerland. You do get to visit the Summerland. That part is okay. You can take that as read, because we get a period of time after we die to reflect on our lives and to try and make some sort of sense of it all. And then when we're ready, we move on to the next stage. And the next stage is to get chucked in the cauldron and recycled. Because it's not a case of getting thrown in and coming out refreshed and invigorated like the warriors did on the battlefield. It's a soup, the cosmic soup. And we get thrown in and become ingredients. We get broken down to our basic components and recycled. So, yes, we get reincarnated, but for most of us, we don't get reincarnated as discrete individuals. The idea is, you get broken down, recycled. Basically, you get thrown in the soup, you become part of the soup, and then when a new soul is required, the big ladle comes in and pulls out a soul's worth of cosmic soup. And that may have bits of you, it may have bits of Rene, it may have bits of me, may have bits of other totally unrelated people. And they become a new person, who may have fragments of memory of our lives, because they've got fragments of us in them.
In 2011, at the second annual Pagan Podkin Supermoot, we gathered together in Salem, Massachusetts, where we held our regular meet and greet, and we had our Podkin dinner and everything like that that we normally do. And then after the meet and greet, Peter held a special workshop. For anybody who was interested in attending, you could sign up for this workshop that was held basically in the back of where we were getting together for our fan greeting. And so the workshop was on ritual possession. It was, one of those topics that at the time was still somewhat shocking, taboo in certain circles, but it was of interest to a lot of people as well. It was definitely not a 101 topic. It was more of an advanced topic. Several of the podcasters signed up for and attended the class as well. I remember Jillian, I believe, was in there. Peter taught this class, which was remarkably good. The class in and of itself, the material, of course, was fantastic. It was very, very interesting material. But what impressed me more was his method of presentation. He, first of all, he let us sort of use him as a guinea pig for experimenting with techniques and to demonstrate different things, which... the fact that he was willing to just jump headlong in with a group of strangers doing, very very specific kinds of magical workings was just amazing. He was the kind of person who could be very open and trusting and willing to work with people. And I think that comes out of the second thing that impressed me. He was a natural teacher. He had the ability to relate what he was teaching to the students and to make us understand without a need to resort to a bunch of garbled esoteric chatter or without necessarily trying to confuse the issue or make it a problem of, you know, needing to be initiated to a certain degree or to do certain things at certain planetary hours. He wouldn't have argued that perhaps some of those things could have had their value in the work, but he showed us ways to work it from where we were. He was really, really good at teaching magic and at teaching witchcraft. And that's something that you don't see everywhere. So I was very impressed by his ability to use story and parable to speak plainly, to give examples in history, and then demonstrate the principles he was talking about in person, in the flesh, and always with warmth and humor and never talking down to anybody. It's something I aspire to, not just in my work on the show and the blog, and in workshops, if I do workshops as well, but in my teaching. That's essentially my primary calling as well. And I try to keep Peter in the back of my mind when I'm thinking about how do I want to teach this class? How can I convey this information? You know, it's one thing to, you know, demand academic rigor of students, and I certainly do that, and I think he did too. But it's another thing entirely to say that they have to, you know, come up to some level that I think I am at in order to even be in conversation with me, when instead I have to realize that we are all on the same page. We are all attempting to learn. You know, the title of our show, our podcast, The Search for American Traditional Witchcraft, that is an ongoing search. It's something that isn't complete. We're all in that same boat together. And Peter really drove that home. He made that clear, and he was no less of a teacher for it. In fact, he was a lot better of a teacher for that. So with that in mind, let's hear a little bit more from him.
It's not a mashup. It's actually both things at once. And this is summed up in the old witchcraft phrase, truth lies betwixt the horns. In other words, where you take two irreconcilable things and find the point where they are balanced and in harmony, then that is the truth. And this is where defeating death, overcoming fate, these are paradoxes. You beat fate by surrendering to it. That is a paradox. You give in and you win. Does that make any sort of sense? Yeah. And this is a very key process, because this is the process that enables you to become thrice born. And when you have passed through the portal of death and yet you still live, you become a paradox and you become the fulcrum point. The idea is that everything we do is about balance, but when we work magic, balance is important because we need to break it. We need to tip the balance. Because something that is perfectly balanced is perfectly stationary, motionless, stagnant. So you don't want balance all the time. Balance is the goal, but the reality is that you want controlled imbalance. In order to get from A to B, get that movement from start to finish. If you imagine your magical circle, your sacred space as a gyroscope. Gyroscope spins, and when it's perfectly balanced, it'll spin in one place for a long, long, long time. But how do you get it to move? You tip it. You imbalance it. You knock it off kilter. And then what the gyroscope does is the same thing the universe does. It moves to the point where it regains that balance. And so whenever we work magic, what we're essentially doing is we're tipping the universe off balance and in a direction that when the universe rights itself and retains that balance, it is now includes the thing we were working for. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And this is all done through paradox.
pretty this time. No more lost and lonely in love. Once in my life, doing it right. I'll never let you go. I thought that you should know. Well, I can't believe what you do to me. You turn me inside out. You capture my soul. I'm out of control. I'm ready for love now. Won't you show me how?
I've encountered tricksters in my own life, and whilst situations that arose because of that I feel were very bad, ironically, I would not really change a thing. I might like things to end more amicably than they did, but ultimately, what was provided was exactly what I needed at the time, and the way things broke down and fell apart because of the levels of deception, was the impetus I needed to shift me forward past a point that I was sticking on. And so it actually did me a lot of good, even though it was very painful at the time. So I can't really say it was a bad thing, even though I wish it had gone in a different direction, ultimately. Really, the trick, I think, when it comes to leading a group, is to try and emulate the workings of the old medieval craft guilds to a certain extent, where the leader is first among equals. He or she is chosen as leader not because they have some special magical gift, but because they're the most experienced or the most skilled, or perhaps they're not the most experienced or the most skilled, but they are the best at passing that information on. They're better at facilitating others. And you basically, in each group, you have to work out who the best person is to lead you and then let them lead you. And at the same time, remember that leadership doesn't mean that you have full dictatorial powers. It means that you have the final say, but that doesn't mean that other people can't have input. And I think that is where things break down. When you have someone who is rules with an iron fist and has absolute control and nobody can have any input, that is when it starts to get a bit risky and you encounter bad situations happening. And doing the whole first among equals thing, I think, makes that less likely. I mean, there's nothing that's going to eradicate it completely. So that's my theory. And
I actually met Peter on two separate occasions, both of which were in conjunction with the events called the Pagan Podkin Supermoots. He was present for the second one, which was in Salem, Massachusetts, and he was present for the fourth one, which was in New Orleans. So I got to meet him in 2013 and 2011. He was supposed to be at the 2012 as well, but that was the year he had his heart attack, and so he missed meeting up with us for very good reason. Obviously, he was recovering from that heart attack, and all indications were that he had fully recovered from that a few months after the incident. So you know, and it defied all doctors' expectations and anything that the doctor had ever seen before, according to what the doctor told Peter. So Peter was a resilient guy, and you know, the next year after missing our get together in San Francisco, he was right back at it there with us in New Orleans. So those opportunities, those chances to meet him, Obviously, I've already said a little bit about meeting him and being a part of his ritual possession workshop in Salem, which was truly remarkable. But just as remarkable was that dinner where I really got to know him and know who he was as a person, and how that really was not a different person than the person that was on his radio show or his podcast. In New Orleans, I had the unprecedented good luck to, to be sort of his chauffeur and carry he and his wife around New Orleans. I actually wound up being kind of the designated driver for most of the events. And so I wound up carrying a lot of folks in the van that I had taken to New Orleans. And so we were able to get a lot of time with a lot of different people, just sort of driving around and you know, looking for parking and avoiding being hit by oncoming drivers as we attempted to cross lanes of traffic and Bourbon Street particularly, which was, if you're ever down in New Orleans and you see Silverman, please throw a dollar into his hat, because without him we would probably still be stuck in New Orleans trying to get out of Bourbon Street, since he was the one who was able to guide us from the middle of the French Quarter out to the edges and get us safely away from the huge throngs on Bourbon Street. And so in those sorts of incidents, those situations where you have all of us together in a vehicle, give us opportunities to talk. But that year I also happened to be attending parts of the Folk Magic Festival, which was there in New Orleans at the same time. And his wife, Linda, was attending several classes there. And he knew several of the people presenting. He obviously knows Orion Foxwood fairly well, knows Mama Star very well. I believe he knows a couple of other folks involved with that group, too. And so he had a really good rapport with them and was able to... I think it was through him I got introduced to Orion Foxwood, and definitely through him I got introduced to Mama Star, which was a real highlight of that trip. And another huge highlight of that trip was there was a downtime after some classes where I was not in a class, Linda was not in a class, and Peter was not in a class, or talking to any of the folks that were teaching the classes. And so we all wound up sitting kind of in the hotel bar lounge area together, and just talking for, I'd say, at least a good hour, maybe a little bit more than that. And he, you know, he gave me his perspective on all sorts of things, everything from just sort of the nature of folk magic, the way that folk magic works within witchcraft, you know, the ongoing witch wars and kind of how those have played out, where they came from as far as he knew, and, you know, just giving me huge amounts of information and background and just really taking the time to talk to me as a person, and not just as the, you know, gushing fan that I was for him and still am for him. But, you know, he was able to, you know, talk to me about what was going on, you know, in the world of magic and witchcraft and do so in a way that made me feel like I belonged. It's something he had a gift of doing, of inviting people in, of being able to talk to people at their level. And it was probably my favorite memory of that trip that I can recall, is just that nice long period of time where I get to sit with somebody I admire and respect and quite frankly gush over a little bit, and just talk to him. So it breaks my heart to think that I won't get that kind of an opportunity again with Peter. But anybody who did have the opportunity to talk to him knows exactly what I mean. And I think even if you didn't ever get that opportunity, if you listen to his show, if you listen to anything he's done where you can hear the sound of his voice, you can tell that he's the sort of person who invites you in. He's the sort of person who makes space for you at the table, and wants to know about you, wants to know what you want to know, wants to talk to you. It's a special thing that he's able to do, and I'm going to miss that tremendously. So.
And so here is my 9 poem, The Dark Queen. The bough sighs and sways with secret currents as you tear our hearts apart, not for the despair and horror we all fear, for true remaking of our immortal essence, most pure and whole, when we are one half serving you. My reckoning still is in the hands of one who will take all suffering in offering from us, to come to us as otherworld hag, or as a pale image at dusk. Let us serve as we can best. Never can we know in trusting heart the true nobility we bear, or ever feel the hidden ways kept by our good kin, my queen, for our use now, without you ever in our true heart and soul. And on such a day as we infect our true self, our royalty, with you, then is ours the vision of deepest and profound power. Never we dared the mystery trespass until we knew ourselves totally, for the gift you offer us is such that we cannot ever refuse. Avert the feeble matter of my search, for this heart is foolish, with such power easy to gain. And as the poems that are hidden within are, it's a written thing. You have to basically count every ninth letter, obviously, so you're not going to figure it out from listening. So I'm going to give you the second poem and the third one. They're obviously going to be shorter and shorter still because they're hidden within the main poem. So the second poem, the hidden poem for the Dark Queen. Sweet and dark is the ancient form that seeks to bring quiet and furtive power to those ever chosen. And the innermost poem, the 9 letters that were the seed for the whole thing, are simply Dark Queen. It is a time when things are very different. The Wheel of the Year operates in a very different way for those of us who work Mound Mysteries. You can almost see the time of the Mound, the Dark Time, as a secondary Wheel of the Year. So you end up with this sort of inner circle, outer circle, or a Daesil circle for most of the year, and then a Widdershin circle for the Dark Time. And it can be very thought-provoking. You can encounter some very interesting challenges and some very, very profound and deep experiences. So, very dark time during which you may derive much enlightenment, but then light always does come from the shadows. What is used to be a very popular way of celebrating the season and is becoming more so in this day and age as people rediscover it is the concept of the Dumb Supper, which is a feast where you actually lay a table, a place at the table for the ancestors, and you eat in silence, contemplating them. It's often done in rural areas in the UK for those who have recently died, and it can also be done generically for all ancestors. So the place that you set at the table can be for somebody specific or for all ancestors to come. And certainly the variation that we practice is to have everybody place something from their plate onto the plate, the ancestral plate, and we sit in silence and contemplate. And then afterwards there is much toasting and merrymaking as a kind of balance.
If you don't know it, New World Witchery wouldn't be here without Peter Patton. In 2009-2010, while I was casting about for something that would make sense of some of the spiritual longing and leaning that I had, I found The Crooked Path. It was, at that point, it was a podcast he was doing sort of on his own a couple times a month. He would have himself, and then he would have Raven Womack come on and do an herbalism section. He had a dedicated site with some forums. And I met a lot of people through those forums, through listening to his show, having that in common, that really sort of brought me into understanding a little bit more about traditional witchcraft. which was a major thing for me at the time. And similarly, well, at the same time, I realized while studying traditional witchcraft that I loved a lot of the sort of structure and function and way that it worked, and I found a lot of success, Lane and I both did, using the techniques, but I was longing for something with an American bent, something sort of rooted to the soil, because spirits of place have a major position in traditional witchcraft, and so was thinking, you know, well, if we're working with spirits of place, what Peter worked with was largely British Welsh deities. The Mabinogian was a major thing for him. And so what we were working with at the time didn't click with sort of the native spirits of our upbringing. And because of that, we started to, you know, cast about for other ways to make things work. And at some point I thought, well, you know, if we're doing that, I should document that somehow. I should find a way to share that. Because as far as I could tell, nobody else was doing anything like that at the time. So I started writing it down and then thought, well, you know, the way that I came to this and the way that I really enjoyed learning about all this was through Peter's podcast. Let me see what it would take to start a podcast. And almost directly as a result of listening to Peter Padden's Crooked Path, the New World Witchery podcast and site were born. They wouldn't be here without what Peter was doing. I wouldn't have thought of any of that as a viable option. Similarly, Peter took chances on me personally at times. Something that I don't think people realize is, you know, I have written and published not a whole lot, not extensively, but in several places, I've written about magic and witchcraft and folk magic and things like that. And my first publications were in the Crooked Path Journal. Some of which, if I go back and read them now, I'm pretty embarrassed by. But Peter took a chance. He you know, he took what I submitted to him and he helped me polish it up as best I could. And he published it, and that kept me going. That kept me interested and alive to the possibilities of doing something more. And it kept me, you know, researching and trying to make that better and better. Kept me working on the website and making sure that I was posting up good articles. And through doing all of that, I've had other writing opportunities. For example, in the British journal, The Cauldron, I've been able to write several articles. Partially based on work I was already doing on the site, which, again, would not have happened without Peter's influence. I, at one point, was training with Peter's coven as a distance student, eventually I chose not to go any further with that. There was absolutely nothing... there was no conflict or anything like that. It just it didn't resonate with me where I was at the time. So I, you know, was very appreciative for the information I got. I still use some of that information in my work, but you know, it was an opportunity to again connect with the work that he was doing and the people that he was influencing, and that's something that I don't know if anybody sees, just how many people have been influenced by Peter Padden, and how connected some of these people are. Some of us really only know each other because of our love for Peter Padden, in some ways. And you know, we've been able to share information and grow together, because of that. For example, I believe I kind of found Sarah Lawless largely through explorations in the Crooked Path forums back when they were still active. So, you know, without that, I wouldn't have connected with her. And she was hugely influential on what I did and what I was learning. So, you know, with all of that, it is no understatement to say that without Peter Padden, what you hear, if you like New World Witchery in any way, if you listen to the show, if you read the site, it's only here because Peter was here first. It's a huge debt of gratitude that I owe him for opening these doors. And I'm so thankful for that gift, for that legacy. And I hope, I really and truly hope, I am able to leave behind something even half as good as what he has done.
I think it's important for people to remember, not that whilst we all need to have heroes that we put up on pedestals, not to make those pedestals so high that when our heroes, our role models, inevitably trip, that they don't break their necks on the way down. Because that I think is the real danger inherent in the disorganized non-structure that we have in the pagan community, is that when we put people on pedestals because they're an author or because they're in the public eye in some way, that sooner or later the inherent nature of humanity is they're going to do something
that causes them to stumble. And I would like to think that as a community, we would at that point reach out to catch them and help them regain their footing. And we can't, but we can't do that if the pedestal's too high. If we set impossible standards of perfection for our celebrities, then we end up getting hurt along with them when they inevitably trip and fall. Now, I know that I am very much flawed. It keeps me humble, I like to think, because it's very easy to get a swollen head. I mean, my first reaction when I saw people referring to me as a big-name pagan or BNP was, holy crap, I'm a celebrity! And then I thought, yeah, and that and, that and $2 will get me a coffee at Starbucks. It's the one thing that... The one benefit that comes with celebrity is that I get to indulge in something that's very important to me. I get to go to places like Pantheon and Pagan Pride and teach workshops and have a reasonable expectation that somebody might actually show up to take the workshop, which means I get to share my stuff with people. And that's really all I ever care about, is this journey has been an incredible journey for me personally, and I just want to share what I've learned. You know, when you look at well-known pagan authors and teachers, don't see them as money-making machines, because I've got to tell you, there ain't a single one of us that is making a good living out of this. We're all getting by at best. And when you guys start being hypocritical and bullying and lying and trying to force us to comply to the way you think things should be, what happens is we start to ask ourselves, why are we doing this? Over the years, there's been a number of people who were very prominent and very respected teachers who have withdrawn from the pagan community because they got sick and tired of dealing with hypocrites and fundamentalists. And as the fundamentalism increases, there's going to be more people stepping back and saying, screw this, I'm just going to stick to my own small group of people and to hell with the rest of them. If that's what you want, that's what you're going to get. But I think most people would like to continue having podcasts to choose from, books to choose from, workshops to attend, and festivals to go to. So how about we as a whole, as pagans, stop taking a leaf out of the Tea Party right-wing fundamentalist playbook, and we start trying to treat each other with honesty and respect. And if we don't like someone, then that's fine. Don't interact with them, don't buy their stuff. But I don't have any right to force you to conform to what I think should be happening, and likewise, you don't have any right. Just because I've got books on your shelf, or a DVD in your player, or you listen to my podcast, I'm very grateful for all of those things, but it doesn't give you the right to tell me how to live my life, any more than I have the right to tell you how to live your life, just because I've published a few books.
So we're coming to the end of our tribute to Peter Patton. One show is not enough to convey how much I appreciate Peter, how much I appreciate what he has been able to accomplish in his time here on Earth. But I've tried here to collect a little bit of who he was, who he is to me, to share my experiences and my feelings about Peter Patton, and to let you hear a little bit from him in his own words, to let you share in some of the things that he loved, some of the music that he liked to share with his listeners as well. And to find a way to say goodbye to Peter. There's one of those sort of mutual friends that I made, who's connected to Peter, and who sort of met in conjunction with him. Shortly after he passed, I had posted something about, you know, how much it broke my heart to lose Peter, and, you know, and she responded and said something to the effect, you know, just trying to, you know, we were just sort of trying to comfort each other, and she used this word, bendith, which... It's the word, if you ever got an email from Peter, if you ever got a message from him in some way, it was the word that he closed with. It was his, it was sort of his way of signing off. And seeing that word drove home to me just what I feel like we have lost. That sense of blessing. I'm at a loss. I think there are a lot of us who are at a loss when it comes to knowing what to do, in a post-Peter world. I do know, that there are expenses to be met, obviously, in terms of funeral and things like that. His family has put up a GoFundMe fundraiser, which is if you go to the New World Witchery website, on the top right, you'll see a picture of Peter. If you click on that, it should take you right to the GoFundMe, where you can donate and help defray some of the expenses. Anything helps. Also, if you'd rather support in a different way, I am taking any royalties I get from the sale of my book 54 Devils, which is the Cartomancy Guide. Anything purchased in October, November, or December, the royalties from those sales will be donated either to the GoFundMe fund or to a fund of Peter's family's choosing. So, those are both ways that you can support them, and, you know, help ease the passing. I know this is an unusual episode. I know this is a strange thing. I don't know how coherent all this really will feel, when all is said and done. So much of this is just me sitting in front of a microphone and just kind of spilling what I feel about Peter and what I feel like we've lost in losing him. Maybe it's too much. Maybe it's too much rambling. But I feel like maybe there are other people who are feeling something similar, or who don't know what the loss is yet. But maybe they'll feel it somewhere down the line. And I want this here, I want this moment here, so that when the time comes, people will remember Peter and know just how important he was and he is, and what a true blessing he is. And so I'm going to leave you. Leave you with the same thing that he would say. And just say, bend it.
This night is holier than I can fathom, and I see you. Singing to the
as crafters, we need to be able to function adequately in all arenas, and so remember to take it slowly and balanced, and make your life magical.